extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, David Goss. He has returned, the prodigal son. What's up, guys? It's Soccer for All month. We'll get to that in a second. It's U.S. Open Cup, round of 32. I thought it was over, but it's not over. I think right now in Minnesota, on top of a lake, perhaps. Probably not. Minnesota United and the Rapids are about to get going to finish off to get us to the round of 16. A lot of talk about today, but Dave, I got to start with you, man. Are you a curse for the Verde and Black? Are you invited back to Austin? Will they welcome you with open arms, or have you been informed that you are no longer welcome? Have you been banned?
No one said anything negative to me. All they said was, tell the other guy on your show.
Anders? Oh, my God. I knew they would
that
go after
Anders. That he should stuff one and get out of my face about everything. Everyone was super nice to me. Bro, I'm culturally Austin. And as an Austonian and an Austinite, this is what we expect from our sports team. But, we love them, and it's a great relationship. So,
gotcha. Yeah. Disappointment is, baked into the casserole, so to speak.
UT lost that big game to Texas Tech in 2011, and it was a big deal, hook 'em horns. Same thing.
Oh, yeah. Like the Vince Young thing, it sticks with you forever, right?
Well, Vince Young won.
Did he?
Yeah, they won the Rose Bowl. It's arguably the greatest sports game ever.
I forgot how that came out. Get after me, Austin. So give me a little bit of an idea of the experience you had. We'll get to everything else. But you got to go to a game in Austin. We just got to do Seattle, and that was a blast. We didn't get your thoughts on that, but that's okay. Tell me about Austin as a soccer city and a place for 18 dudes to go to a bachelor party.
Well, you definitely see the gear everywhere. So it's one of those cities where it's you land, market relevance. We mentioned soccer. We're talking about soccer and Ubers, and Uber drivers are like, oh, you're going to the Austin FC game on Sunday? To be clear, we are talking about soccer. Is Bobby Warshaw quizzing us about the draft picks after him in his 2013 Super Draft class? And we're talking Jeb Borofsky. We're talking Hector Jimenez. We're in it. And this guy goes, what do you think of Man City and Villarreal? And I was like, one, credit for even knowing what we're talking about right now. And two, I love it. The guy was a Villarreal fan. We told him about Austin FC, and he's like, I'm going. I'm so excited. But everyone knows about the games. Everyone has their own tradition already a year and a half in about what they do. I kept asking what's the plan, and I really appreciate all the Austin fans who tweeted at me schedule of what to do pregame, how to go about it, but everyone had something different, which I thought was cool for a team that's not that old. And the area around the stadium is pretty cool. There's a ton of breweries, there's a ton of space for food trucks. It's exactly what you want for a soccer game. My experience, and I could be wrong about this, the area between downtown and there is a bit dead. So it's you got to get there early. Don't it's not one of those stadiums where it's we'll meander our way to the game. Go to the game 5 hours early and then pop around the breweries, pop around all the different restaurants in the area. And that's your day. And it was awesome outside of the weather. I don't know how anyone survives in weather like that. I had played two soccer games before I even got in the stadium, the way that I had sweat through everything. Oh, and then they built the stadium spot on. You walk through the metal detectors in the doors and the temperature drops 15 degrees, and it's aired and it's shaded and there's fans. And then you're okay, yeah, actually I can do this. I can survive. Food in the stadium is awesome. Shout out to Valentina's. So it was really special. I guess it hits me every time we go to one of these stadiums. That's a new site, but it's just perfectly built. And you're wow, I can't believe this exists when from all of what everything else we've been through. And
yeah,
Charlie's
you
still
you're talking about your Schleps to Giant Stadium, yeah, et cetera, back
Charlie's
in the
still going Hold to on. Gillette once a week. No offense, but, get a soccer stadium at some point.
Why do they got to catch strays? There's no reason for that.
Listen, bro, champions. But it was special. It was cool. And to come off Seattle, where it's different but similar, right? It's a passionate fan base. It's a fan base that is locked in. People know what's going on. People that came up and talked to me, it's not just Austin's the best team. They know what Houston's doing. They know what's going on with the Galaxy. They know soccer and everyone's really into it. And to see that built in a soccer-specific stadium, it's just a different type of soccer environment, but it is an Aces market. And I hope they continue to be good, because I think, you know, we look at markets where teams are relevant and how it can buoy the league and what can happen. And that's what Seattle was last week. And I think Austin can be one of those as well.
It helps to be good. That's a key point. Austin's got to prove that they are that. I think they are. I'm writing, after we get on with this show, basically who's for real, who's not for real among non-playoff teams from 2021 currently above the line. Who do I think will stay? I think Austin will stay. We've given you a lot of compliments here. Austinites, Austonians, and people that are not from Austin that now live there and enjoy this team. So, yeah, look, coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, U.S. Open Cup, round of 32 results, a look ahead to the round of 16, some praise for the Football America's goal cast, which was absolutely awesome yesterday. We'll talk Canadian Championship, too, as well. We got our best moments from the Open Cup and a bunch of insane games, shootouts, comebacks, everything in between, yada, yada, yada. We'll hit all that and also try to decide who we think might win this thing, who we want to win it. Look ahead to MLS Week 11. We got some games, of course, Saturday and Sunday. National TV, our ESPN Plus games of the weekend. And I put out on Twitter, as I do before every show, a thread. This is going to be, in large part, a mailbag show. I have probably 30 tweets interspersed here. We got a bunch of emails as well. So we'll try to get some listener voices in here to guide things. And we'll also give Charlie an opportunity to answer Zlatan, who we somehow passed over him saying he's the best player that MLS has ever seen and ever will see.
I don't think we have the weight to step into an arena with Zlatan. Charlie has at least enough to get in the room and start that conversation.
Charlie's got some inside information. He's heard from Oguchi on Yewu how handle this business. So
yeah, exactly. He's got
the scouting report.
My right-hand man, Oguchi on Yewu, to defend me if need be.
You're the guy that's like, yeah, come at me. Like, and you got Gucci. Yeah, you hear, right? Like, hold me back. Yeah, hold me back. Yeah, hold me back. You can't handle this. All right, before we get there, though, this is the first day of Soccer for All Week, and Soccer for All Week runs through May 23rd, but I would say, and I think MLS would emphasize, that Soccer for All is something that we're doing year-round, that we want to emphasize year-round, of creating equitable communities, of supporting everybody. Not just who loves this game, but everybody in this world. Like, we have a responsibility to do that. MLS doing some big things this month and also all year. You can check it out at MLSsoccer.com. What's going on with the league and the club? Some things to highlight here on our side. We are going to talk to Bobby Wood next week for AAPI month. If you haven't listened to the Sean Davis interview from last year, I suggest you go back and do that. Talk to Bobby Wood. It should be good, about soccer, about life, about a lot of different things. He's an interesting cat. I also want to direct you over to MLSsoccer.com for the Tigers supporters group feature. J. Sam Jones did a really cool piece on the supporters group. Basically, they're based out of LA's Koreatown neighborhood. And so, you know, they've kind of knit that community together. They show up to games, have grown from like 15 to 100 people, and they're mixing in Korean chants with Spanish chants with the English language stuff that 3252 does. So it's really cool. And then one thing I would highlight as well ahead of June, which is LGBTQ plus Pride Month, is that you'll see the warm-up jerseys this year, but also MLS is going to make donations to Athlete Ally. It's an organization, you know about it, we've talked about it on this show a number of times, an organization supporting equal access, opportunity, and experience in sports, regardless of sexual orientation or identity, gender identity, or gender expression. So that's really cool as well. You can go to MLSsoccer.com if you search Playing for Pride, and you can find a way to donate yourself. So should be a really cool month, and happy to be a part of a league that's supporting that stuff year-round. All right, let's get into the soccer side of things. Dave, people always say, you got short shrift to Canada. You never give Canada the same sort of coverage that you give the United States, whether it be an Open Cup or the clubs. Well, that ends today, and we'd ended a long time ago. But this is proof in the pudding right here. Canadian Championship comes first. Tell us what's going
on. Vancouver Whitecaps defeated their first ever CPL team yesterday in their third try. So congratulations to the Vancouver Whitecaps. They tweeted it.
You think Mark Dos Santos was somewhere in L.A.? Like,
So the coach of Valor, who they beat, is Phil Dos Santos. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So it all came full circle. It was all in the family. Christian Gutierrez's brother started in central midfield for Valor, a Whitecaps player. So yeah, it was a family affair. It was Canada.
Yeah, it was a family affair.
It was the preliminary round. Vancouver was the only MLS team in the preliminary round because, of course, they lost to Pacific FC last year. And then you have all the CPL teams that entered in the early round this time, because Pacific, as the champion, got through to the next round automatically. So we've got a delicious Toronto FC traveling to Halifax for the next round. Their stadium holds like 5,000-6,000 in downtown Halifax, which is, I don't know, on the side of Mars. It's so far away.
Yeah, where
it's
is
it's all the way on the end,
by the way.
It's as far as you go.
The end of what? Which
east,
side? The
east. East. Sorry.
East. Pacific. Yeah. So it's like Nova Scotia. It's like Nova
Pacific's
Scotia.
Pacific's the west side. Don't start trying to get me on provinces because I'll get them wrong. Pacific's on the west side. Okay. Pacific plays York in the next round, which is a pretty far flight for, I think, York, who will be traveling. And then Halifax over there on the east side. Forge got a win as well. Gulf United, spelt G-U-E-L-P-H in Ontario. Semi-pro side that got in the tournament. This is the biggest group of semi-pro teams that I've ever been in. As the CPL grows and as these leagues grow, there'll be a new league in British Columbia, which is on the west side. I know that. Starting this year, that'll get in next year. And Outremont of Quebecois Open League was in it as well, but they lost.
Outremont. Yeah. Nice. By the way, it is Nova Scotia. Where Halifax is located. And if you're looking like that's all the way out, like it's basically on the same longitude, latitude, whatever is the north south one of like the British.
Oh, you know
Virgin
what's amazing
Islands,
actually? They're in their own time zone. So there's a half time zone in Canada. So like Greenwich Mean Time, where on the East Coast we're 5 hours ahead, they're 4.5 hours ahead. That is the coolest thing. Love time zone conversation.
How many provinces can 10. You guys name? Can we just for the hell of it here? How many can you give 10. Me? I'm ready.
Alberta,
I'm ready to test you right now, Charlie. Okay. We've got. Hold on, Alberta.
Ontario,
we got locked it in. Lock
Quebec,
it in.
Quebec.
Yes. British, lock it in. We got
British
three.
Columbia.
Four.
Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia. If you didn't get that one, that
the
was
Northern
bad.
Territory and the Yukon, I believe, are territories.
It is Yukon. I'll give you that one. Ding, ding, ding. You said Northern Territories. It's the Northwest Territories, but it's right in the middle of like two other ones. So I'm going to give you that. That's a, you get that one. That's a lock that one in.
And
well
then
done.
Something named after Prince.
Prince Edward Island. I'll give you that one as well. Check mark. You want to contribute here, Charlie? Or are you just, you out on the provinces?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Can we, one last chance. You got any others?
Did
any
I just
others
say them all?
Here?
How many did I say?
No, there's a couple others. You're missing a couple. You're missing a main one. You're missing Manitoba. That's a
and
hard
Saskatchewan?
One.
Regina? Or is that a city?
Saskatchewan. Yep. Saskatchewan. No. Regina's in Saskatchewan. So you got Saskatchewan as well. And I'll just, none of it is up there. It's like, it's east of the Northwest Territories. It's up in the, you know, like the beluga
clear,
whales migrate there. It's a,
for
it's
you
a
to
crazy
prove
place,
that
sure.
we do value Canada as much as the U.S., to show that we don't know the provinces of Canada was probably not the best way to go about that.
You knew most of them. Them. Knew most of them. New Brunswick is one. That's right over it. New Brunswick. So
home of the New York
Jets.
Could
have had that one. Would have expected that one from you. And then my personal favorite, Newfoundland and Labrador is going to be another one that we throw in there. Okay. On that note, let's keep it rolling here. U.S. Open Cup, round of 32. It was an absolute blast over Tuesday and Wednesday. And now, of course, Thursday as we tape this show. There may be a game going on in the Twin Cities. But I just saw a tweet of a large storm front that is very red
another
and yellow
one?
That's sweeping its that's like potentially sweeping its way into Allianz Field. So we'll see what happens on that one. Round of 16 draw goes down tonight, Thursday night on Football Americas on ESPN Plus. It's going to be live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So check that one out.
We
we'll see what
can we
get
yeah. a hard yes or no right now? If SKC gets drawn to play at Omaha, you making the drive?
I think if they get drawn to play at Omaha, I got a couple Marriott free nights that expire June 30th. So that feels like, and we'll get to this in a second, that feels like a little family vacation.
I love Omaha.
Midweek.
To be clear, as a person, David Goss, huge Omaha fan. Every time I tell people that, they think I'm joking. I am not. I like Omaha as a city.
Yeah. You and Peyton Manning, big Omaha people. All right. Connor, how about this one? Connor Sims hit us up. He's rocking the Minnesota United hat, so we know. What should this body of water be called? This is from last night, the only game that wasn't completed, and we're waiting to see if it will be completed between Minnesota and Colorado. Charlie, did you see this field? Did you see Allianz's, picture of Allianz Field? He wants to know what that body of water should be called. I believe they called it Allianz Lake on the Football Americas. That seems weak to me.
No,
man,
that's
seems weak.
Land of 1,000 lakes. 10
I mean, it's not a sea. It's not an ocean.
Yeah, but it's not a lake either. It's
bigger
you're talking
than
about
a pond.
You think so?
Yeah.
Just a soccer field. You think a soccer field sized area is lake status.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger. It covered the whole lower part of the stadium. So for me,
you're talking to a Lake Winnipesaukee guy. This guy knows his lakes, so watch out.
Thank you. Gosh, let's go. Okay.
I was gonna go with I think Inchy's Pond would be better. But you know, I guess we'll let Minnesotans chime in. They do have lake expertise. We'll see if that one gets done. Before we get to the details on all the games, how do you feel from Turner Hess? How awesome was the Football America's goal cast? Yeah. Thought they did the Lord's work, he said Sebi Salazar and Hurt Gomez did the Lord's work. And I would have to agree. It was amazing. I turned it on.
Yeah, me too. I had it on 6:15, 6:20. I think at some point it was like, oh, whoa, I'm just hanging out with Sebi Salazar and Hurt Gomez tonight. Yeah, it was awesome. It was. You had guests coming in. And one of the things, and I think we found this, especially with the World Cup stuff we've done, but especially the Decision Day stuff we did, is like, you forget the guests you're bringing in will also be into the game. So it was like cool to see, like, you know, Ben Olsen asking questions and Brad Evans, like, where is this stadium? And like all these different things and like sort of getting locked into the moments. But it was for 10 games over the course of the night. I mean, I was drowning Tuesday in 6 games. I couldn't keep up. So for them to do it for you and just to be having fun the whole time was really cool. And they both have so many touch points in North American soccer, right? Ben Olsen comes on, Danny Cruz comes on, and you're like, Sebi Salazar's known these guys for 15, 20 years. And then Herc basically has played with or for every team that has ever played somehow, including his cousin's husband, who scored for Sacramento.
Yeah, that part I was like, what is this? Yeah, like, what are we doing here, guys? How many like degrees of Kevin Bacon can we have? Or like degrees of Nathan Sturgis in this case? I'm with you. Like, whenever I watch Open Cup, I love the tournament, but I always feel snake bit. I always just feel like I choose the wrong game. And if I choose the wrong game, I switch off that game in the wrong moment. And then I end up missing all, I'm missing all the big stuff. I'm like, just, like, okay, this is awesome. It's so much fun. I just have to luck into the good moments. And this gave you an opportunity not to do that, to just get them kind of delivered to you on a platter. So really cool thing. Love it. I was wondering, what does an extra time goal cast look like? In my mind, it looks like MLS After Dark on a Sunday or a Saturday, I should say, like 7 p.m. until the end of the night. And you're just like cycling through games, having guests come on, maybe from Sunday to promote ahead or just to talk about what's happening. So I don't know, maybe in a future iteration of an MLS media world, we will be doing something like that. But we're definitely doing watch-along shows for all the U.S. and Canada games through the Nations League, as well as the friendlies coming up and then the World Cup. And then you'll see us on Decision Day doing a watch-along as well. So stay tuned to that. Good stuff from the Football Americas and ESPN Plus folks. Let's hit our favorite moment from round of 32, and let's start with you, Charlie. What was your favorite moment that you saw from this round of 32?
Easily for me, it was Nashville, Atlanta. I mean, one, the stadium still has the same luster, considering it's a U.S. Open Cup. It didn't necessarily like drop, you know, from 100 to a zero. You still felt like it was a good atmosphere. Atlanta jumps up 2-0 in front, Thiago Almada, Araújo, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, these two players come alive. Like, this is what LA United has been waiting for. Up 2-0 at half, and then Nashville said, all right, let's flip on that light switch. And by the way, they win 3-2. Is Ake Loba still your guy? Like, now that you've seen him in the Open Cup too?
Drew a penalty.
Are you still sticking with him? Started the
comeback. Was that a, do you think that was a penalty?
Me? Weeby, I don't care
that that was
about the call. Okay. That's where you lock in. We're talking good, young, attacking players. You're like, was it a touch? Was it not a touch? I think Alan Franco put himself in a place to have a penalty called against him. And
Loba's
allowed to stop in that moment and get hit. I will say Franco responded like it wasn't a penalty. And there's no VAR in Open Cup, so that's questionable as well. And
what defender doesn't respond 100%. That way?
Loba should have scored that, though. Like, he put himself in a great spot, and he almost took the penalty over trying to finish it himself, which I thought was a little frustrating. And because it was the goal cast, Charlie, I'll be honest, I did not laser in when he was on the field. So I'll have to go back and watch a little bit more. But, yeah. I mean, they're already in. Like, you got to make it work. For Nashville, they're not going to $10 million on the next person, and I don't know that they're going to get a huge number for him. It's sort of on you to make this work or win MLS Cup without him. Those are your two options. Otherwise, it's a failure. So I thought it made sense to start him in this game and give him the chance next to Hany Mukhtar. I almost would have given him the penalty to take as well. You know how I feel about this. Albert Rusnak from the PK spot. Get a guy going from the PK spot. They chose not to do that.
Yeah, Hadi's not doing that. you know, it's like I think there's instances where the best player always has the pen no matter what. No matter what the instance. There are occasional guys who say, you know what? It's not about me. It is about the team. And more importantly, I'm just trying to get this guy like his goal and hopefully get him going. Hadi Mukhtar said, I'm the PK taker. I'm taking my PK and I'm gonna bang it. He's on the verge of becoming the league MVP if Nashville can get over the hump and win, you know, the supporter shield, and then, you know, it really puts himself in a position to win. I do think if they had that one player next to him,
yeah,
that would be able to vault him to the
top. What do they need more? They need a Hadi Mukhtar that's confident in rolling and scoring goals, or an Ake Loba?
He's been confident. Even when he started this year not scoring.
I know, but the goals aren't going in for him right now. If I'm Nashville, I'm like, let him see the net.
He's playing the soccer you want him to play. Even when not scoring at the start of this year, he's creating the moments. He's taking the shots you want to take. That'll happen. That's fine. I think you want for him to be his best, which means they win. Stu Holton's calling. Does he have a complaint about Ake Loba?
Does he not know that ETR tapes at this time?
Charlie, you're going to go hurt Gomez on us?
Do you not know that ETR absolutely records at this time, just so you know?
I did not know that.
So, yeah, you're live on ETR, just so you know.
Well, it's not technically live.
You are live from Stu's car.
I don't know if he's going to be able to hear that. We're going to have to pump the volume on Stu
for this appearance, because I don't know that we have the budget for that.
They said, do we have to pay Stu for this appearance? Because we don't know if we have the budget for that.
Okay, yeah. You blew it all on Weeby shit.
Oh, no. Hit the hang up. Hang it up. Hang it up.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to Stu later. Look, Hadi Mukhtar gets a PK. CJ Sapong, that header at the very end of regulation to tie it.
Class.
Really nice. Stoop down header, just like almost impossible to redirect that ball back on net, and he does it. And then Ethan Zubak squad stand up. Ethan Zubak gets the winner.
Are you in that squad?
Are you part of that squad?
I don't know. I'm
calling out the squad. Like, if the squad exists, they should stand up.
Like,
this is the moment.
You know? Circling. Yeah.
No. I'm not personally. I was happy for Ethan. Woo! But if that squad exists, they should definitely stand up, baby. Right now.
It was a good finish, and it's part of the sort of issue for Ake Loba is like there are four or five forwards who can play on Nashville now. Is their ceiling with all of them the same as if he's hitting? Probably not. CJ Sapong would be the most, right? He has scored 16, 17 goals in a season. He's played in MLS Cups. He's played in big games. But I think for Gary Smith, he looks at it and says, I can win tomorrow with CJ, with Zubak on the field. So I don't need to play Loba until he earns the time. And it feels like it's a struggle for Loba to earn the time when he's not.
I don't know if Zubak's in that.
Well, I think he would be for a game in or game out in MLS sometimes. Not every week. Not for the
even
playoffs.
Just as somebody to change the game a little bit off the bench.
I think what Nashville needs is someone who is going to absolutely work their tail off as long as they're on the pitch. That's what CJ Sapong gives you. He's constantly moving. He's constantly working on both sides of the ball. And he's such a physical presence that he no matter what center back or defender has to deal with them, they're going to have a tough time, no matter how good they are. He gives backlines problems because of his movement and his work rate and he's unselfish. It's really hard to replicate that with a player like Ake Loba, no matter how gifted the player is. If they don't work on both sides of the ball, given how Nashville's system is, it's going to be very difficult. It's not that even if you play Joseph Martinez up there, it's not going to be the same production. It's not going to flow the same way just because that's how the Gary Smith's team is set up to play. They're set up to play a certain way. So if you don't have a player who's willing to move all over the pitch and defend and set the press, it's not going to be successful, in my opinion.
Ake Loba on the field this year, one of the things that you see, and if you're just saying, okay, I'm going to look at the underlying numbers. In this game, he draws a PK. He's had some moments. He had a moment when he was played 45 minutes the other day where he had a kind of a 1v1 with the keeper that got stoned. But as far as goal dangerous situations as measured exclusively, this is through that lens by XG, he is not productive in that sense.
Because we're on the wrong thing here. Charlie said it. I think this is a game Nashville doesn't win if they're not at Geodis Park. The energy in the building, the atmosphere in the building, the same fans at Nissan, I just think it would have been too hard to feel it. This is a team that was down 2-0 and it felt dead. And like, oh, wow, they're going to lose to Atlanta. I guess Open Cup's over, move on to the next competition. And then Loba draws the penalty early in the second half. And every time they cut into this game, it felt like a big atmosphere. It felt loud. It felt energetic. And that, I think, pushes Gary Smith to bring on Sapong, to push for the win. Even after Walker Zimmerman's goal gets called off, they continue to push. They continue to push. This was everything of why you build the stadium, why you create this atmosphere for a team of on-field and off-field impact. And now they're in the round of 16 of a tournament, and they beat Atlanta head-to-head, which they're obviously in different conferences. They won't play as often this year. Like, that, I think, was all worth it, and it was pretty cool to see that happen within a week and a half of the stadium opening.
So Southeast, that's the region here, and the draw will be tonight, obviously. But it's Nashville, Louisville City, who knocked off Detroit City, and PKs again, Inter-Miami and Orlando. I think pretty clearly you want Inter-Miami, Orlando, and Nashville, Louisville City. I think that's sort of an undoubted ideal draw from the Southeast. My moment of the round of 32, it was a moment that I wasn't there to witness. I went to the Sporting KC game, Dallas game, on Tuesday with Cameron, dragged the four-year-old there, and we're still getting used to stadium environments, some of the loud noises, not really his thing at this point right now. For 75 minutes, we're there. And 75th minute comes, it's past his bedtime. He's like, we got to go, Dad. Like, he basically was like, I'm tired, we got to get the heck out of here. And I was like, I don't want to, I'm not going with the crying and the fits and everything that can come from an overexhausted child. But for the first 45 minutes, probably the first 60 even, maybe even more than that, Kansas City were terrible. And I was like, is it me? Is it them? Who is it? I was there for Leagues Cup last year and it was embarrassing. And I was there this time. I was like, this is also embarrassing. Dallas should be up how many goals? I mean, I was above the goal to watch Hadier Obreon somehow, some way miss an open net, and that came back to bite Dallas big time. But right as I was leaving, you start to hear the subs coming in. Like, I think Johnny Russell got subbed in right as I left. Daniel Shalloway had come on, and the game had started to shift and change, and Kansas City in the second half was the aggressor after just being under tons of pressure in the first half. And right as I walked out, right above me, they show on the Jumbotron Travis Kelce and Pat Mahomes. And the crowd goes wild, and you saw Daniel Shalloway afterwards tweet, like, when they went on the Jumbotron, that was the changing point. And I was like, also, that's literally the moment I walked out of that stadium in Kansas City. I listen on the radio, just starts roaring back, roaring back, roaring back. They had looked terrible. They flipped the script. They're undefeated against Dallas in Open Cup history. I think it's 5 games at this point. You know, red card laid on, and it's like, well, that probably won't matter. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden, that does matter. They get the late equalizer to send it to extra time, and then handle the business 2-0 in extra time. Even Kyrie Shelton gets a goal, depending on how you define that.
So
maybe
when
it's an own goal.
When Peter Vermees said after the game, well, we changed our formation and then we were able to figure it out, he meant getting you out of the stadium. That's
correct.
What he meant.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
You know, if I was joking about you being a curse for Austin, I think I might truly actually
You're
be
way
a curse
worse
for Kansas City. So. congratulations to you, Kansas City, for that comeback. It was cool. It was cool just to listen to it on the radio. I could see how it would have felt in stadium had I been there.
It was funny, you know? The clips, like every time they showed the crowd when they'd score, just like the pure ecstasy. But I've spent all week. I had Paul Tenorio on MLS Today on Tuesday, and Sebastian Salazar on Wednesday, and Alex Gange-Ruzic as well, to talk about cup stuff. And I keep asking, like, who needs a cup run? This was what this a tournament like this can be. SKC have high expectations. They are down. This is a rallying point. It's goals scored. It's energy. It's all the things that they've sort of been looking for. You can get them in a regular season game, but it doesn't hit the same way as, oh, wow, now we're in a round of 16. And I think that all of what happened for KC, listen, if they just make an Open Cup run this year, it's a successful year for them. Like, that's what the potential has. I will also say I'm very high on the, like, let the goal get scored, don't get a red card. Jose Martinez, I get it. It's the 96th minute, 95th minute. You're like, if I just take this dude out, whatever, two more minutes, we win. Now you go man down into extra time, and that's sort of where the loss comes from.
Yeah, look, it's a big moment for Kansas City. Just to sort of prove that they have it, to have that buoying moment that can rise the tide a little bit. I still don't think they're out of it in MLS. They have talent. You know, Tizonis gets a goal in this one.
What a great corner.
I'm forgetting the header. Yeah. Like, that no, is but an the take amazing header.
Power-driven, but to the top front corner of the six to keep it away from defenders and just say, flick this on and put it in a dangerous spot. It was a really good corner kick. I also think Benny Failhaber was standing right behind the corner talking to Shallowy as he took it.
Nice.
Open cup, baby.
Just, you know, head coach of SKC2, just get a couple little pointers. Hey, whip it right here. Whip it right here. So, big one for Kansas City. Dave, what's your moment? What's your favorite round of 32
moment?
There could
be a lot. The one I will fall to is Francisco Calvo hitting the crossbar and then Stephen Cleveland's back to keep San Jose alive in their 11-round penalty kick shootout after receiving a yellow card while on the bench during this ridiculous game at Starfire, which we were at last week and is such a cool place to see a game. But really just San Jose and Seattle. Up 2-0 for San Jose. Calls kind of going all over the place. Seattle fights back. San Jose pushes it to penalty kicks on the road. And then it took 11 rounds, and Matt Brissano, former Sounders 2 player, scores the winner against Steph Cleveland. Goalkeeper mano a mano. This is why Open Cup's great. Knockouts, cup competitions, penalty kicks, a different stadium, different atmosphere, different experience for the fans and the players. And similar to KC for San Jose, could this be a rallying point? Or could an Open Cup run save their season? I think those are both legit for them.
So one quick note here on the Sounders losing in a PK shootout. Jeremiah Oshin, was a pleasure to be around him a ton over the last week or so, said it would appear the Sounders are paying some sort of karmic price for their 2016 MLS Cup win. They've lost all four shootouts since then. All four came early in the playoffs, as well as this one, 2018, 2020, CCL, 2021, and then 2022 Open Cup. So a little payback on that side, but they will not move on, will not have a double with CCL.
The quad is dead.
It's dead. Nick, other parts of it have been also dead, but we'll get to that in a bit when we talk about the game on Sunday. Nick hit us up and says, San Jose winning the Open Cup while being bottom of the league would be peak San Jose, peak MLS, and peak Open Cup. They're not actually bottom of the league. They've been playing really well. They're 11th. 9 points. They've dragged themselves out. Vancouver winning the Canadian Championship might be somewhere on that front. Who would be the DC United winner from 2013, from this group, the team that's like, look, the league is over for you. Don't worry about the league. But if you get an Open Cup, it's going to be sort of, I don't know, it'll be a rainbow and a rainbow after the storm, so to speak.
Vancouver and what Goss just said. I mean, KC. I think those are the two teams that don't have much going for them right now.
Listen, I'm going to start at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. I'm going to say New England Revolution. You're 11th in the league. The season's over. Nothing matters. You got nothing to play for. No quality in the team.
He thinks he's going to get
Books is leaving in the summer.
Is
you
he
know,
out it's of his just, mind?
So Matt Turner's gone. Like, it's all Brooks about the, you know, gone. Listen, we know how much Bruce Arena cares about the U.S. Right? Open Cup. It's like, you know, number one in his heart. Like, he'll even travel the games. And if they're at home,
to be serious,
even more
it's
so.
Inter-Miami. Of maybe they'll make a playoff run this year, maybe not, but... You know, on the soccer side, can you do something to affect your market? And I go to me, it's not about winning it. It's about playing in a final and like having the week-long buildup of this team's relevance, news covering you, stories covering you. Like we were in Houston, right? When they won, when they had struggled. I've been around Philly a couple times when they've been in finals. Like it gives you that relevance. And I think Inter Miami on the field hasn't had that. And so if they were able to make a run, especially if they play Orlando in the next round, right? And it's a game that has some resonance in the area. I think that could be a really big moment for them.
What about Charlotte in year one? I know they've got the buzz going on right now, but what about Sounders-esque winning an Open Cup in your first year? Because they're probably, you know, they might make the playoffs. It's very possible. But they don't look like an MLS Cup caliber team, so to speak. But they could win Open Cup, and that would be a big deal.
The one in the Charlotte jersey, you tell us.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot I was wearing this. It would be huge for Charlotte. It would be just club-changing. Absolutely. No doubt about it. All right, some other big moments. Shout out to Union Omaha They got $25,000 for being the furthest advancing D3 team in this competition. So knocked off the Northern Colorado Hailstorm, which all is pretty cool matchup. All hail the Hailstorm. Union Omaha, Team of Destiny, asked Tom T. Postings Dose. I don't know. We'll see, hopefully. And then out of Lou City, who advanced, as I said, on PKs, Union Omaha and Sacramento, who goes the furthest? I believe those are the only lower division teams remaining in this round of 16. Who would you put your money on?
Who would I put my money on of the three?
I would say Lou City.
Louisville's the best team in USL. They're the best team in the USL championship. I mean, you could argue over the last 6 years, off and on. They lost Cameron Lancaster, looks like, for the season. But, yeah, they've got experience in central midfield. They've got young talent that they can sort of – they have depth that other people don't have because they can bring those players off the bench. They've got goal scorers, Brian Ownby, game changers, guys like that. So I would say Louisville City would be the one that you would expect to, but I also wonder if that's not how this works. Right. Like if there's a level of expectation on their shoulders that maybe Union Omaha, they can just play free. No one expects us to win. And that sort of makes it easier.
Who do you want for Union Omaha? I guess I want Kansas City because maybe I can go use those Marriott points. But Dynamo also in the Central, and then one of Minnesota or the Rapids. Feels like you'd want Dynamo, I don't know, Dynamo, then Minnesota or the Rapids, and then have that easy travel point for Kansas City and Omaha. And I would hope that it would be in Omaha, but if it was in Kansas City, it'd still be cool.
I drove from Omaha to Denver when I was there, so I assume that's a thing people do, but I think it's like 8 hours. So I don't know that.
Yeah, it's not. That's the Midwest for you, man. Here's one from Andrew Jolson. This is probably for you, Dave. This is your expertise. Are there any young players on the non-MLS teams we should watch for in the Open Cup round?
Yeah, Josh Winder, who scored against St. Louis a penalty. I don't know if he scored in this shootout. Left-footed center back, just turned 17 from Louisville City. I've seen him in person. I've watched him, you know, from afar a couple times. Kid's good. I think he's like, we're talking national team center back level. He might even be right-footed. And he starts at left center back. He's so comfortable with both feet. He's tall, but he'll build out. You know, he'll fill out. But he seems to get the speed of play. He's willing to step forward with the ball, break lines. He's really impressive. And then Ray Serrano, who was part of the Sounders Academy, who's still only 19, who's with Louisville as well, who came off the bench in the last game, started the previous game. He's the athleticism's the question, and that's sort of what you saw. Sebi Salazar and Herc Gomez talked a lot yesterday to people about what's the difference between MLS, USL, USL League One. From a lot of people I've talked to who have played in both, it's not about skill and quality, it's about speed and physicality. And like, can you make decisions at the speed that MLS is happening, or can you have that clean touch while you're under the physical pressure of a player in MLS, which is the difference? So Serrano has that skill. He has the technical ability. The question is, can he sort of figure it out physically as he moves up?
All right, let's talk quickly about Inter Miami. Made some jokes about how it'd be important for them, but they beat South Georgia Tormenta.
So everything's happy, right?
Team
they
here.
Won. It's a good day.
No. Phil Neville, here's what he had to say after the match. I thought the performance was unacceptable. Full credit to the opposition. They deserve to be in the next round. He also said that some of the players on the pitch tonight were asking for game time, and Phil said that this performance tonight was the reason why they don't start most of the time. This is from Alex Windley on Twitter, at AAW_1998, who does an incredible job covering Inter Miami top to bottom. Robbie Robinson in this game, I don't know if anybody saw the highlights here, Charlie, he went full like professional wrestling. He got after it. Something happened that he was not about, and he went headlock, took a dude down, red card. What do you think about Phil Neville saying this? What's the motivational tactic here, and have you ever seen anybody go a full Robbie Robinson on the field before? You're a former wrestler, so you should know.
I have, but not in a match. In training I've seen some body slams. In the locker room I've seen some body slams, but never in a match where the player received the red card. And I think from Phil Neville, you're just trying anything. You know, you had that little burst when Campagna came onto the scene and kind of pushed the team to get results, and it looked a lot better. I mean, it's not that they're playing beautiful soccer by any means, but they were effective in the counterattack and playing through him. And I think his defensive pressure and his work rate inspired the team, and things were working. They're just not a they're just not a good team. That's what it comes down to. Inter Miami is just not a good team. And so as a coach, if you feel like you've exhausted all your options, you know, another one that usually doesn't go well anyways is let me hammer my team, even though we win, in the press. and the guys who aren't playing, who I gave them a chance, now they know why they're not going to play because I hammered them in the press. And then when I put out a lineup next match in the league and they're not on the team sheet, those are the guys who just didn't take their opportunity.
All right. More from the Open Cup here. Just some headlines for you. Galaxy over Cal United, who are the final NISA team remaining. And Cal United took a lead at their home stadium, but then the Galaxy came back. Maybe a questionable. We might, you know, maybe some stuff in this one that we would have looked at on instant replay. We'll put it that way, Charlie. We won't dive too much into it. But Galaxy come back, win 3-2. Revs absolutely whooped Cincinnati. We'll talk more about that one as we talk about the national TV game between them and Atlanta this weekend. Charlotte also did some whooping in Richmond. 5-1, both those games. NYCFC won at a fifth venue that this year. Five venues. Red Bulls haven't won at any home venue.
Thanks, Ruby. The Richmond game, the Cincinnati game, a lot of these games were odd in that. So Richmond scores, I think, to make it 1-1, and then Charlotte explodes.
Yeah.
Since he goes up 1-0, this wasn't like, it's 4-0. Yep. And we saw this in a lot of games, which the reaction to goals was very odd, and I think it's the difference between one team being like, oh, whoa, this is a cup game, and another team started treating it like a league game. And you saw almost every game, the reaction to goals, whichever team conceding or scoring, reacted better over the next 5 minutes. They were the one that went on and won the game. And I think it shows you sort of the difficulty in adjusting your mentality in the middle between league games.
So we talked quickly about who we think maybe needs it or who would be the DC United of 2013, like the team that just the Open Cup means everything because it's all they have. Doyle tweeted this out, okay, with 17 teams left, which is still objectively sort of funny. Who's winning the Open Cup this year? What would your prediction be? And it's a combination, obviously, of quality, of coaches that will take it seriously and teams that will put the resources into it. Who is your prediction ahead of this draw in the round of 16?
I'm going to say Nashville. I think when you look at their region, one, right? Because I believe the quarterfinal will be the other teams out of your region. So you're looking at Louisville, Miami, and Orlando. And a team, as we've said a couple times, right? They have structure. They have a philosophy. So they'll play the same way every game. Now with this home atmosphere, if it's a home game, they've got the leg up. They've got the advantage. And they've got depth to challenge. They're not playing. They didn't play in CCL. They don't have to worry about that. While I think they want to win every game, I don't think they're going to contend for a supporter shield. So it feels like they can sort of focus to this, get a trophy year one in Geodis Park. And I think they're a team that's sort of built to do it as well.
I'm going to go LAFC. I thought that Steve Cherundolo put out a really strong lineup for this game midweek, and he still has more left to put into it too that didn't necessarily get into the 11. They're going to make a big move sometime in the summer to get to that point. You know, they'll have to win a couple more games, but then you'll start to see like semifinals, final. And I think winning a trophy for them outside of the shield matters. And not only is it a trophy, it's you're into CCL. And this is a team with the way that they're building their team, with the ambitions that they have, with how close they got to winning that trophy. I think they care about CCL. And so I think they're sort of using this as a, hey, this is like a cheat code, a jump ahead, you know, win a couple games and we'll have a spot. We don't have to do the whole season thing. MLS Cup, the playoffs, that can be a crapshoot. We know that personally. So can Open Cup. But if we field good teams, if we get some home games at the right time, we can do this. And they'll be motivated. Like if there's a Galaxy match in the Open Cup, that's not a match that you can throw away as either Greg Vanney or Steve Cherundolo. There's not a sort of like, we'll put out the second team here. The nice thing about LAFC, even their second team guys are really, really good. And also, I just want to see Mamadou Fall smile, man. Mamadou Fall is the man. I love him. He's like, he might be my favorite player in the league right now. He gets the goal in this one, goes and pulls on the sombrero afterwards, calls it a golazo with a little sly smile on his face. So I'd pick LAFC. That's my choice. How about you, Chuck? Who's your team?
100%. I'm in your camp. So give me LAFC. I think they're going to spend a good amount of money in the summer. They're going for a big game changer. So we could also see a trade here or there. I think ultimately I'm still a little concerned about the back line. defensively?
We'll get into that. Don't get too deep here.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm just saying. We got a question down in the LAFC section.
Ultimately, I think they need to improve the back line.
Get a little more more calidad. What's the
last time that everyone on ETR picked LAFC to win something except me? Everyone picked them to win a double, and they didn't even make the playoffs. So Charlie just solidified my pick.
I do remember that.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
The curse is real. I said don't go into it now, but I guess we can because we're on to week 11 here in MLS. Remember the draw for US Open Cup, round of 16, Thursday night, Football Americas, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. And if you're not watching Football Americas, you should. It's just a really fun, entertaining, good show, great reporting, good analysis, and also some things that might frustrate you at times, but that's part of the entertainment value.
Well, but before you even do that, I want to say I do think Nashville are set up best to win Open Cup.
Wow. Charlie came back around and dropped the curse on my head.
Exactly. He's painting the curse with a broad brush right now. He's like, oh, you thought you escaped, did you? Bap. All right, Saturday, national TV, of course, all the listings, all the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. You can watch a ton of games on ESPN+. We'll get to those in just a second. But
I was about to say, I love that Charlie has been wearing the scarf like a championship belt the whole show, but then he just took it off.
I also like that when he put it up to like show the soccer for all, he did it upside down.
That's how
the first
it always
time.
Works with scarves.
That's good stuff.
All right.
Colorado LAFC gets the national TV slate started on Saturday. Univision Turin, of course, always on Twitter in English for free, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. On that one, we mentioned defensive reinforcements, and it's time to once again, and this time more seriously, talk about Giorgio Chiellini to LAFC. Good idea, bad idea, somewhere in between. Why would LAFC do it? Well, it seems like they might do it.
Yeah.
The Athletic reporting, and that's, you know, that's Sam, that's Paul, that's Felipe, that's guys who are well sourced.
That's
the rumor, the report, whatever it might be. LAFC recently offered a contract to Giorgio Chiellini.
Chiellini.
I screwed it up that time, but I had it the other time. So I just want to say thank you for forcing me to be my best self. Sky Sports Italia reported last month that Chiellini would leave at the end of this season and move to MLS despite his contract not technically being up.
Yeah.
I think he played 24 games this year for Juve. It's not over yet, but I think he's not
win a Coppa Italia.
He's at 19.
Spoilers.
He's at 19 games played.
In all comps or just in the league?
In the league.
Okay, well, I think I'm talking all comps here, but is he 29? Is he 30? We can argue about that at a different time.
To be clear, he is 39.
He's 38 in August, though.
Oh, that's important context.
You know we love a month. Okay. We love a birthday.
That's a couple months.
I will say you are throwing money in the trash. You are literally burning money. For if you're gonna pay $1.65 million,
let's give the context here. Yeah. He would not be a DP. I'm trying to give people the context.
So $1.65 million is under the DP threshold.
He'd be a TAM player.
Boom, boom, boom. Got it. Okay. He's missed a number of games from muscular injuries. It seems to me also that it's a calf problem because it's been multiple seasons with calf injuries. He had a ligament rupture in 2019. So that season, he only played in four games, 201 minutes total, and missed 13 games last year, 1389 minutes. And this year has played in 1289 minutes. For me, getting a center back in this league, we all know is super athletic. It's a league where you got to do a ton of running. Now, if this was a LAFC team that was used to bunkering in, staying tight, you're not getting isolated, great. Then he wouldn't have to move that much, and he just needs to be in the box, and he's going to win all the aerial duels, great. But if you're telling me he's got to run and be forced to cover outside backs and be in 1v1 situations away from the box and get isolated, no way. This is not a good move. I can tell you that right now. You're better off spending that money on a midfielder, a box-to-box midfielder, or someone who can complement Ilya Sanchez, or go get another attacker. For me, it's not a good move, especially if you're LAFC.
Or get a younger center back? maybe? Because right now the lineup for them is, you know, you got Jesus Murillo, who's been much improved this year, I think, from last year. Mamadou Fall, he who occupies my heart, and Sebastian Ibiaga, who got a start and a shutout against Portland. So you would assume, yep.
You're leaving out Danielle Henry, who they just signed, who's in his prime, and you're leaving out Eddie Segura.
I just hadn't got to him yet.
But the point is, I don't understand signing a center back at all for a team that has five center backs. You want to say some of them you don't think should be starters? I think Ibiaga he's one of the best backups in the league. Like, you won't lose when he's on the field.
No disagreement.
And I think Danielle Henry is probably bordering that right now as he works his way back, and we don't know if he'll ever be the guy he was when he left Vancouver. Fair.
I think he's around the same
great
caliber.
So then you have two guys who are perfect for their roles. You have Murillo, who is a locked-in starter in MLS. You have Mamadou Fall, who's a young up-and-coming player, who's filling the spot until Eddie Segura gets back, who I think 1v1 is the best center back in Major League Soccer as a defender. What I just don't understand the value to your team in bringing in a center back at all at this point.
Let alone 38.
And on $1.6 million.
About to 30, be 38.
He'll be 37 until he's 38.
Right. So, like, he'll have a month of being 37. Yeah,
or if it's Keeling, okay, or great, what Weeby's saying, which is bringing a younger guy. I think, I just don't think it's a position of need for them. And if you want to say, well, we don't think we're strong enough in that spot, well, then you got to get rid of someone before you bring someone in. Because I don't think you can add a sixth center back to a team that's playing in a back four and say, this is how we're going to win.
And I don't think it's a position where you say, oh, we're just bringing him in so he can teach for sure and educate. No, not now. That's not – you don't have two 19-year-old starting center backs and you're going to pay Chiellini, let's say, $200,000 to come in and be that leader. And you'd say, okay, that makes sense. Like, maybe I'll do that. But for 1.65 or around that number, that's a waste of money.
It feels like, in a lot of ways, sort of the opposite of what they've done and emphasized over the last, like, you know, 8 months or so. The course correction that they've had were like, oh yeah, like MLS veterans early in their primes is actually, or mid-prime or late prime in Ryan Hollingshead's case, maybe, just on age. Look, age is just a number. Ryan could go
on
for many more years.
I think Ilya Sanchez is late prime, too.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I just, you know, after the whole Giassi thing, I just feel bad about calling guys late prime. You know, as someone who's never had a prime, it's tough for me to be in that position. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It feels like from a cap standpoint, no sense. Why would you use valuable cap space, as you guys have said, on a position that's not necessarily of need in any way, that you have depth in, cap effective depth, and when you have other needs that could take you over the top to be a supporter shield and MLS Cup winning and maybe Open Cup winning team? Like, this team very much has treble potential. It doesn't make sense. Unless it was like, hey, you're going to be basically a coach, like, as you said. But Chiellini's not coming in for $200,000. Not when they're already saying he has more lucrative offers. They mentioned Vancouver. That also doesn't make a ton of sense, other than the fact that Vanni Sartini is Italian.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vancouver can use help all over the pitch, to be honest. But
you're telling me you're going to go play Chiellini with calf problems and other and
no, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
38. He's not, if he's not playing at BC not, Place, he's 38.
Not him, right? I'm not talking about him in particular, but if Vancouver was floating out any player who's mid-prime, who's coming in, no matter what position, I'd say, great. You know, maybe outside of goalkeeper, they need help.
No, they sort of need help at goalkeeper too.
Need goalkeeper help. Yeah, they need help at goalkeeper too.
I mean,
so all these prime talk, it sounds like we're talking about mortgages. Carl Carpenter hit us up and says it's early in the season, of course, so still time for results to normalize. But is LAFC start sustainable? Carl, he's obviously he's been in the analytics world for a long time. Mm-hmm. They are overperforming a lot of their metrics, which he says, and that obviously tends to revert. What have they done well, and what needs to be improved on? If you look at sort of like goal differential minus expected goal differential, they're overperforming in that zone by about 5 or 6 goals. And that's top 5 in the league as far as overperforming. Austin FC are at the very top of that, and they're overperforming their model, at least by American Soccer Analysis numbers. That's just what I can check quickly and easily. Got a lot of other models you could look at. Austin would be at like 10. So, Dave, what are LAFC doing well? Is it sustainable in your mind, and how do they improve it?
How do you improve it if they're doing well. That part of the question I don't totally get. But they have they have been cleaner defensively. I think Ilya Sanchez has cut out a ton of the issues in terms of when the team gets opened, which was their big problem over the course of the last 2 years, was when they pushed numbers into the attack, especially the fullbacks. When the fullbacks came in to overlap, it was 3v2 going the other way, and it was a giant gap before anyone was there to even meet it. And I think Kellen Acosta's ability to cover ground alongside Sanchez and Sanchez's positioning to stay a little bit deeper and give support to the back line's been key. You add on to that they do have center backs who can cover ground and are athletic. So whether you trust them defending 1v1 in all those moments, they at least are able to get out and get to those situations earlier. So you're not playing from as deep of a position. And then Maxime Crépeau is a huge part of it as well. He's an elite goalkeeper. And when you talk about XG versus the actual goals you give up, he was one of the top three or two last year in MLS. So that part is sustainable with him, right? He's an elite shot stopper. He's good with his feet. He's good coming off his line. I do think there will be a drop off because I don't think Sanchez can play the whole year. I think that was part of the reason Peter Vermes didn't keep him, was he wasn't able to do this week in and week out for KC. It's been great to see, and this is a better setup for him because the center backs, as I said, are more athletic and can help cover him a bit more. And Kellen does more work defensively than anyone that was in that KC midfield. But I'd be shocked if he can be this guy. So the question becomes, can Kellen then do that role by himself? And if so, who partners him? I think LAFC will take a step back, but I think they'll continue to contend at the top of the Western Conference.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. And you hit literally every reason why LAFC are
1-2 punch
in a good position right now. It's Ilya Sanchez, it's Kellen Acosta, and it's Maxime Crépeau. Their goalkeeping situation before Maxime Crépeau was god-awful. It was horrible. I'm not even going to beat around the bush. It was terrible. It was inconsistent. They're giving up goals left and right, and you couldn't rely. Had they had a strong goalkeeper like Maxime Crépeau from the very beginning, we're talking when Carlos Vela went on a tear, they're winning MLS Cup. But because you didn't have a good goalkeeper throughout this time who would be consistent every game, you knew what you're going to get from him, that was their Achilles heel for LAFC. Now you're bringing in two central midfielders as well who give you stability, who are more defensive-minded in Kellen Acosta and Ilya Sanchez. And I think it's allowed them to be in games, one, and two, be in a position to win, 1-0, 2-1, and get the players in the attack on the ball. They still have not seen the best of Brian Rodriguez. I mean, he's out with an injury. I still think he was still on the upward trajectory. I thought he was getting into a comfort zone before that. Ismail Tajiri Shroudi is also another player who could help this team in the attacking third. So with Carlos Vela locked in now, you don't have that worry. I think Cifuentes is also another player who has continued to improve, and I think he's getting a hang of MLS and kind of what his ceiling is with his potential. You really got to like this team, and I think they're only going to get better, to be honest.
What's not sustainable? If you look at the numbers, I would say the set-piece production, they're at the very,
don't they
very,
have
very
nine
top of the
set-piece goals this
sustainable.
Year? Yeah, wasn't yeah, the Rapids crazy. First with like 12 last year?
Yeah, no, it's truly absurd. And that is even with actually Mamadou Fall underperforming his expected goals. Well, the flip side is that Ryan Hollingshead has scored like 2.5 goals more than the model thinks he should have. So that's where you start to see some of the overperformance. It's Hollingshead, it's Ismail Tajiri Shradi with some of the golazos he scored. Carlos Vela, actually, the model thinks has overperformed. But that to me is a good sign for them, as you said with Brian Rodriguez, which is like, we have not seen the best of Carlos Vela, by no means. If you add another piece in, we haven't seen the best of Chicho Arango. There's all these pieces that haven't quite been there, but the set pieces are an issue. Where it is encouraging for me, and you mentioned this about the defensive side, Dave, XG and goals allowed are pretty close. Maxime Crépeau has been good, but he's basically minus 0.93, which is to say that he has saved about one goal that the model would expect to scored. Like, he's had that effect, but it's not at the very, it's not like it's absurd where he's just standing on his head.
It's not Matt Turner, right?
Correct. So they're limiting chances for the other team. They're scoring some unexpected goals, whether they be golazos like Tajiri Shradi against Kansas City, or Ryan Hollingshead on what seems like every set piece when they need one. Some of the timing there is what get them up to the point total that they have. But even on the models, they would be second in the league. Like, Red Bulls are the only team with more expected points than they have. So I think it's sustainable. It's just a question of where these different levers start to be pulled and what goes in, up and what goes down. How about the Rapids? People are going to be mad at us. They're going to say, why are you talking about LAFC?
To be
only?
Clear, the Rapids are in the middle of their second half of a soccer game in 24 hours on Thursday afternoon before traveling home and playing on Saturday against LAFC for this weekend. I think it's pretty hard to tell what we're going to get from Minnesota and Colorado.
It's 1-1, by the way. I just checked.
Saying that's what they restarted at 1-1. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm an idiot.
Hi, Weeby.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's 1-1. It's just another opportunity to see Jossie Zardes in the lineup and to see what that means for this team. And, Diego Rubio should be back, so that's big for them. We'll see. I think the Rapids are our playoff team, but they're sort of hanging on that line right now where it doesn't feel quite like it did last year, and looks at pieces part of that as well. All right, let's go to Sunday, Atlanta, New England. Carlos Heel, he's a boss. You can watch this one at 1:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes. Carlos Heel with a hat trick in the Open Cup. Adam Buxa, it's 5 games in a row with a goal now. Charlie, are things turning for the Revs? Is this a sign of things to come?
They are turning for the Revs. And obviously, when you have Adam Buxa, who's confident in form, and Carlos Heel, there's not too many things that can go wrong in the final third. But defensively, you had Henry Kessler and Andrew Farrell not playing together for most of the season. So they're both in sync. DeJuan Jones and Brendan Bae, I think they're continuing to improve. So that back line, you got to keep them together. Then Matt Turner had been out for most of the year. I mean, you're talking about a player who's winning you games as a goalkeeper. When you talk about expected XG and how he's able to keep goals, certain goals from hitting the back of the net, that's big time. You're talking about a confidence boost throughout the team, plus his distribution and his organization skills. Fantastic. So I think from that alone, you're going to see a boost. This team is set to continue to improve and possibly make a summer move as well.
But that thing's going to be a problem, right?
Yeah, with Turner going?
If they're better now because Matt Turner's then they're not capable of winning MLS Cup.
No. Yes and no. So Turner coming back makes them better, and it makes the whole team better. That's 100% the case. But what they did do is they went out and got a keeper that they believe in who can come in, and the level will not drop off like it would if you had the goalkeeper.
They're going to start a 22-year-old Serbian goalkeper in an MLS playoffs this year.
They are. They're very high on him. I mean, he has a lot of experience. He's played a number of games in the professional league in Serbia. But number two, they say he just has to catch up to the tendencies of the team, the league, and this. The next 6 weeks are almost like you're grooming him to take the position. And he's learning a lot from Matt Turner. They're working together. Everyone's very high on him. Just to tell you how it is in training, people say this guy's a freak athletically and that he will eventually be a keeper that they...
Listen, I'm really high on Cam Weeby, but I wouldn't have him host the show tomorrow. I don't know that he's ready, so...
down the line, he's got something.
I don't know, that
man,
seems risky, but interesting.
So I just want to throw out, Brendan Bae had an absolute heater. We talk about DeJuan Jones a lot as far as the attacking third goes and really contributing in that way, but Brendan Bae just absolutely crushed FC Cincinnati in the Open Cup. That was really fun to see from him. We know he has that potential. How about Atlanta? Like, there's some negatives here. You know, young team, says Gonzalo Pineda, couldn't handle the PK call that went against them and sort of wilted down the stretch. But it's nice to see once again Araujo, Marcelino Moreno, and Almada on the field. Araujo's goal is just absurd.
Yeah, it's nice.
the thing with Araujo is they desperately need that from him. Like last year, there were a lot of moments where you're like, this dude is technically stupid. Like people can't keep up with him. The touches that he has, his ability to finish in tight spots, really, really good. But there wasn't enough of it. It wasn't consistent. They got to have that from him. So like if you're Gonzalo Pineda and you post Miles Robinson, we've already beat that one to death. They got to figure out the back end. Dave, how do they play the rest of the way? How do they get the best out of these three guys, and what does that mean for the rest of the
team? I think it's tough because I would say their best way to play is in transition to allow these guys space to run. But do you want to sit in a deep block with Bobby Shuttleworth and George Campbell and Emerson Hyneman replacing Ozzie Alonso, Miles Robinson, and Brad Guzan? So I don't really have a great answer. I would say, and we've seen it in bits, if you can get Moreno and Almeida on the ball and have them dominate the game, that can allow you to sort of dictate where the game opens up and where it doesn't. And I do think Araujo is a player who, it doesn't matter the state of the game, he'll create chances. And so I think you have a little bit more license than what you've had the last few years, which was like, we need to create a level of insanity. Otherwise, we can't break open a team.
Are you saying legit Matias Almeida peak San Jose Earthquakes?
Listen, under DeBoer, that was the only moments they were good was when the game opened up and got ridiculous. And under Heinsohn, that was like sort of the game plan. So I don't know which way Pineda goes here, because I don't know that what he needs fits exactly what the talent is set up for, if the talent's even set up.
I'll tell you right now, with that group, that back line, if you play a high line and you try and go run and gun with teams, you are going to get absolutely pummeled. I think the only way you can move forward, and it might not be the best for an Almada, but you have to defend and play a low block, absorb pressure, and look to counter, and then look to transition game in winning the ball in the middle third of the field when you're dropped, because you cannot have a high line with DeJohn and Franco. That just... it's a recipe for disaster.
But do you really want them sitting in Bobby Shuttleworth's lap week in and week out? And do you want those guys to have to make more decisions and be more involved?
Your only decision is defend. Yeah,
fair.
You play like all you have to do is literally have everything.
Yeah, but you have to pass off runners. You have to figure out who's going with the runner coming off the wing, who's taking the center forward.
But
you're talking to who? Emerson Hyneman and I don't even know who, and I guess Rosetto as your defensive mids.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's would you wrap the alternative is play high and try and win games 5-4, right? So
I mean, isn't there an alternative where even when you take your moments to go on the break, both Gutman and Lennon are at their best in open space too, and all of a sudden, when you do expose yourself to try to go get a goal or two, you still are facing a counterattack coming the other way. Like I don't. Mm.
I think we're all coming around on the same situation, which is they might be in a little bit of trouble. And I think this game was an example of that, by the way. The attackers hit. They're up 2-0. They lost 3-2.
All right, let's get into Seattle, Minnesota, and we'll hit the mailbag. Seattle hosting Minnesota at 4 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, just like Colorado, Minnesota in the middle of a game. Sound Rain says, is Brian Schmetzer coach of the year after CCL? Where would your coach of the year sort of rankings be, and where would Brian Schmetzer be in those rankings right now? Coach of the year, an MLS award. So while CCL matters, I think it's...
Right? We know everyone's going to count so we just don't have to pretend.
That's a good point.
We're 100%. Yeah, like,
but if they don't make the playoffs or at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff field, let's say 5-7, then I don't think he would not, in my opinion, have an opportunity.
Anders already said he sent in his coach of the year.
He's already done. It's over.
But I will say it's a two-horse race right now between Steve Cherundolo and Jim Curtin.
Wilfred Nantes.
I think Nantes and Struber are both in that group.
Well, I'm saying right now, if you had to pick one, it's between those two. Top of the Eastern Conference, top of the Western Conference. Josh Wolf certainly has to be in the conversation, mm-hmm. considering where Austin was, and Wilfred Nancy as well, because I think Wilfred Nancy to go from the assistant coach to start the year, Henri departing, and you have to now all of a sudden be in charge of guiding these players. One, I thought he did a fantastic job that year, but he's only getting better. He's helping this group develop and bringing in new players. I love what Wilfred Nancy has done with Montreal. And then Georgi Mihailovic has grown exponentially under Nancy. Yes, he's definitely in the conversation.
I think it's crazy open right now. I think to try to handicap coach of the year in this moment, you'd be insane. Like if FC Cincinnati get a home game, like in Pat Noonan's first year, nobody's talking about it. Nico Estevez has one loss. Nico Estevez and Dallas have the same record as the Philadelphia Union.
The dude who writes the MVP article the 3 weeks into the season thinks it's open for Coach of the Year 8 weeks in.
Yeah, Nashville, Gary Smith has a ton of home games, and Nashville could go rise all the way up to the top. They could win a shield.
But wasn't the question right now if you had to pick a coach of the year?
Now,
he wants to go and name 12. He wants to name 12 coaches.
Listen, dude, he already has LAFC on the double, on the treble, quad. He has LAFC winning the quad. He's making up a fourth competition just to get it there. I will say this, I like the idea of Seattle people being awarded ridiculously for winning CCL, of it just being like, here's your Nobel Peace Prize because you did this thing, and we're not even gonna tally the points. I'm in favor of that.
Here's 10 million of GAM. There you go. Here's 10 million of GAM.
Oh, speaking of, good transition there, Charlie. You've been reading the rundown. Reporting is that there is no determination yet, if there will be any at all, of an allocation windfall for the Sounders to better prepare for the Club World Cup, and we see that for CCL teams. They get additional allocation money. I don't know if you would call it necessarily a windfall, but TBD on that. Adrian Hanauer, owner of the Sounders, says this, without going into detail, and he's on the product committee at MLS. He's one of the owners on that committee. That's the committee that basically set the rules. Like, that's what they do. So without going into detail, those conversations are going to happen about whether the Sounders should get more, says Adrian. We've done things over the course of time. Teams that qualify for Champions League get a little bit more allocation money, but I personally believe we can do more. I don't think we used to reschedule games. We now do that. Charter travel, things like that are helping. I think we can do more. I think we should do more.
That to me seems like across the league, though, not just for Seattle. That statement there seems to me that he wants the overall quality of the league to continue to improve and that they could do more to get that type of level.
Let's be brass tacks. Should Seattle get more to go compete in the Club World Cup?
Yes.
What say you, Dave? Yes or no? Yes. I say yes, too. I saw Doyle's tweet, and we were talking about it in this group chat, where he's like, let's give a fourth DP or $1.5 million to CCL teams. League's Cup's coming in 2024. Let's give CCL qualifiers both of those things, and everybody else gets to choose between the two, and all of a sudden, boop, 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 quality of play, roster building, goes up.
I don't have any
control of the levers, so I don't have any power here.
I would say
in
general, I think the way I would see it is the allocation money more because in a traditional American sport, there is no outside of the league competition. And so the idea is, the Warriors won a championship. So now the salary cap sort of brings them back down to everyone else over the course of time because, guys get bonuses and escalators and play well. And that's the case with MLS, except you're also then saying, but when you're good, we also need you to go and compete. So I think the allocation money makes more sense as a way to just say, here's your money to help cover Nuhu's raise, Alex Roldan's raise, Jackson Reagan's raise, to keep Steph Cleveland on your roster.
Oh, you're getting Jackson Reagan. Yeah,
exactly.
Pick, huh? Nice.
Listen, go Wolves. I'm a big Longhorns fan, obviously number one, but then Wolverines.
I think that's
where you do it, which is like we're not changing the nature of rosters, but we are helping you stay together so you can continue to compete at this level.
A fourth DP would be a quote unquote permanent change, whereas additional allocation expires once you use it, it's gone. So yeah, I think they should help Seattle. It's within the league's best interest
to have
the Seattle Sounders
to
be able
clear,
to compete.
I think the language should be shifted. They should not help Seattle. Seattle has earned it, and allow them to compete. I don't think the word help is right because this is the question that always came back when the Galaxy would do things. It's like, why does the league do this for Galaxy? It's like, if you push, then you get space, right? If you compete at this level, if the Houston Dynamo do this, if KC does this, then they would be rewarded equally. It's not because Seattle is a big market or a big team, whatever. It's because they won things. And so I just want to make sure that's laid out there.
Okay. Justin Witt says, with Seattle out of the Open Cup and bottom of the West, is their CCL victory tarnished if they can't do well over the rest of the season? So let's say they don't make the playoffs. Would it be tarnished? And I only put this in for Anders' reaction.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, it's not there. I don't think they'll be in a position where they won't be in the playoffs this year.
And so you don't think it's going to happen, period?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, period. And I do think that they value this CCL more than, Supporter Shield or, being first in the Western Conference. They just got to get in the playoffs, which I think is going to be relatively easy for them considering their roster and when everyone gets fit, because there is that hangover of winning the trophy and then everyone's kind of put everything into it. It's going to take them a month, I'd say, to get back into a rhythm with Major League Soccer and fit and healthy. And then you're off.
Yeah, look, Brian Schmetzer, in limited time here compared to his peers, third all-time in MLS playoffs wins with 15. Sandra Hart just tweeted this. No MLS coach with any playoff appearances has a better winning percentage. 75% of the time
Mikey,
he wins.
The Mikey Barrios experience always hits. Sorry, I'm watching this Rapids just Minnesota game.
Yeah, live open co commentary. By the way, Anders right now is all caps.
I will walk off.
You are talking about Alvaro Fernandez, Flaco, in the group chat. Anyway. All right, let's get to the ESPN Plus games of the week. I guess we're going first, Charlie, because Dave literally did just walk away.
It's a
Bobby Warshaw moment for him right now. Can I go first? Charlotte FC, Montreal would be mine. Charlotte, very good at home. 4 wins in 5 games. Montreal got their seven game match unbeaten streak. 5 of those wins coming into it. So I think that's going to be a really fun game. Some quality in that one. Always love to watch Georgie. If you have not listened to the Kolb's interview with Georgie Mihailovic, go and do so. If you haven't subscribed to them, make sure that is part of your weekly routine as well, to listen to Susanna and Jill do their thing. All right, go ahead. What do you got?
And Weeby, I'm loving the Charlotte jersey you're rocking, by the way.
Yeah, it's nice. I like this one.
Yeah, it's a good one. I went with the Galaxy, third in the Western Conference versus the fourth team in the Western Conference, Dallas. And you touched on Dallas's record right now. They're playing really well. And Jesus Ferreira is on a tear. Paul Arriola looks like he's getting up to that level as well. And so the Galaxy, yes, they won 1-0 against Austin, but it was a poor match as far as quality. I kept watching it being like, all right, Austin's going to score now. Galaxy are trying to give Austin a goal here. For whatever reason, Austin just couldn't finish. But this Galaxy team is not strong defensively. There's still a lot of questions. And I think this game could be telling.
All right, Dave is back. Dave, what's your ESPN Plus game of the week?
Without me.
No.
No, of course not. No,
my ESPN Plus game of the week is the best game of the weekend. It's Philadelphia Union hosting the New York Red Bulls. Philly went and played what felt like a championship game last week out at LAFC. 2-2 tie. This is sort of the second half of this test for them to come back. And now you are playing the best road team in the league in the New York Red Bulls, and a team that you played in the playoffs last year. It took you 119 minutes to get the goal against, and two teams that are somewhat similar, but the Red Bulls, I think, are the one you'd say has improved since last year. So I think it's going to be a weird soccer game because it's two teams that don't want the ball, that want to smash it down your throat and play direct and all of that. And we sort of saw how that played out last year. But now the question is, what shifted? Is Gazdag a guy who can pick up on some of those second ball opportunities and create chances? Is Ura play? Does he get you goals? What's Klamala look like in a game like this year? Luquinhos as well. So I think these are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference from what we've seen. And you're always going to tune in when rivals who are great play.
Mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We start with Mark Davies via email. He says, that was a very embarrassing decision in that Toronto-Vancouver non-goal by Jaden Nelson. I don't think that's the verb I would use. It was just incorrect. Since VAR did not correct it, can we at least scrap VAR? It's easier to take the referee on the field. It's easier to take if the referee on the field just doesn't see it. Fair enough then, but now we have a system that delays the game and still doesn't get it right. Please scrap the system. What are you talking about, Mark? What are you on about, dude? Like, what? Like, because one thing happened that didn't get corrected when you saw in the Open Cup, for instance, what the lack of VAR can mean. Like, we're not going back. Like, nobody's going back. Nobody should want to go back.
Right? No VAR.
Like, no system is perfect. Nobody ever claimed that it would be. Nobody's like, hey, video review is going to solve everyone. We're going to get them all perfect. No, that's not what is going to happen. But I was thinking about it. It's like being in a water balloon fight and having a shield and not having a shield. You can get a lot less wet if you got the shield. Like, let's prevent 60, 70, 80% of calls that could be corrected You're still going to have the other ones, but my God, man, overreaction. Overreaction. How about this one? Somebody hit us up, says, Zlatan went on one the other day, I think on ESPN FC maybe, says, I'm the best player to ever play in MLS. And I thought to myself, Charlie Davies must have a take about that.
You got that right. Look, Zlatan was one of my favorite strikers that I got to watch and play against. And for what he did in his career, it's and he's still going at 40 years old, is incredible. To go to Serie A, still banging goals, it really is remarkable. But in terms of best player to ever play in Major League Soccer, and you can look at it in a lot of different criteria. Best player during his time in MLS?
Sebastian Giovinco.
Probably still doesn't eclipse Giovinco's 2014-15 season when he had 33 games played, 22 goals, and 13 assists.
He wasn't better than Carlos Vela in Vela's insane season.
Exactly. And maybe you could say he was better than Josef Martínez in his insane season. But Carlos Vela, Giovinco, even Robbie Keane, I said he was just – he had that one incredible season. And if you're talking about just prime – yeah. Thierry Henry. He's not better than Thierry Henry as a player on the totem pole of the greatest strikers to ever play the game. He's certainly very close, but he's not Thierry Henry. TT is probably, you know, top three all time, four all time as a striker. You know, you throw in Ronaldo, Fenomeno in Brazil, you know, and then you have Pele, Cristiano Ronaldo. Is he a striker? Is he not? But TT's in that conversation.
How about this?
And then Didier Drogba. I think that's a good one. Zlatan Ibrahimovic in his prime versus Didier Drogba in his prime. Wayne Rooney in his prime versus Zlatan Ibrahimovic in his prime. You know, Kaká in his prime, World Player of the Year, which Zlatan did not win, versus in his prime. David Villa in his prime versus Zlatan. Those are more, I think, realistic and probably closer to maybe Zlatan being in the conversation as the better outcome. But not Thierry Henry.
It's incredible it's very Zlatan for Zlatan to make the claims like that and have played on the Galaxy teams that he did. He obviously can't do it all, so to speak, but that's like right down Zlatan's alley. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter what happened with the team, the results, any of that stuff, whether I made my teammates better, I am the best player in the history of that league. He was entertaining. Loved him when he was here. No doubt about it. Interesting conversation, though. Jim Kim asks, if the CCL final had been Seattle, New England instead of Pumas, how different would the vibe have been? In what ways would it have been more interesting? Would it have been better or more interesting? What do you think, Div?
Would it have been better or more interesting? I think the conversation would have shifted because it would have been weeks of who will be the first ever. What will it mean? Rather than, I think we couched a lot of that, and then it came out after it was over. And so I think it would have shifted. I do think both teams would have filled their stadiums. I do think it would have felt like a big event. It would have been a big moment. It may have actually been a bigger moment in terms of like what that tournament means in MLS circles and what it means to the two markets. And so I actually hadn't thought of it that way, but it's a great question. I think for all of us who have been around, we wanted this. We wanted an MLS over a Liga MX team in the final. It was fun, but how cool would it be if that was the case going forward?
Yeah, I would like to, going forward, fine. But in this case, it needed to be MLS beating Liga MX. For all the history there, for the established narrative of what it was, for the hegemony of Liga MX, it needed to be MLS in the final beating their neighbors to the south, and they got it done. All right, that's it for us. Big thanks to you guys. Thanks to everybody listening. We will be back on Monday to break down week 11. If you aren't subscribed to MLS Today, the podcast feed, do so. MLS Today, MLS After Dark, the Power Rankings show. We'll leave you on that note. Adios. Congratulations. You made it through more than an hour of extra time.